I think I'm going to do a little experiment on the podcast today, Greg. You know what it is?
Okay.
As much as I can, I'm going to reference Phil Esposito, Gary Bettman, and Mike Babcock. And maybe you know, pepper and parsley it with a little bit of, oh, I don't know, Lou Lamoriello, maybe some Brian Burke as well, knowing full well that you're under the weather and you will not be doing impressions today.
Well,
so
I mean,
I keep talking about him because you'll want to touch that button. You'll want to keep hitting it and go back there. It'll be endlessly frustrating to you.
The thing is that sometimes you just got to know which ones are in range and knowing that you could do Babs for the whole show is the thing that you know that you can do.
You know what's hilarious?
That's all I could really do.
You know what's, we talked about this on the 5 o'clock show yesterday. Actually, Glenn Healy referenced it and used audio examples with Nazem Kadri. You know what's happening in Toronto right now?
What's that?
The players are starting to sound like him in interviews. You should hear it. It's hilarious. when you hear the interviews, like, you can close your eyes and imagine, like, this is Mike Babcock talking. Glenn Healy on the 5 o'clock show yesterday did something hilarious. He edited together in one interview all the times that Nazem Kadri used the word structure. It's stunning. Greg, it's stunning. How many times? It was like 8 times in one interview about structure. Structure, 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 structure. It's like more and more of the players, like, you know, stylistically and strategically, a coach is going to rub off on the players. But I've never heard a team actually, when they do their interviews, sound like the coach. But there it is, Toronto. It's kind of where we're getting to now.
Yeah. But that's a good thing. That means that he's rubbing off on the players that won't be there when they compete, finally. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Which may be sooner than later, if you look at how that Marlies team is doing in the American Hockey League. Good Lord, it's a murderous row. They're lighting it up. That's a really good AHL team. Like, I don't know how many of those guys actualize into the NHL and when they do, but, you know, I always said take 300 games and throw them away before the Toronto Maple Leafs are a good squad. And I'm still sticking by it, but I'm not writing it in pen anymore, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And then let's take a snapshot of where the National Hockey League... let's take a snapshot of where the National Hockey League is, by the way, at this point.
All right.
A shutout for Tuukka Rask against the Leafs last night, 2-0. A shutout for Craig Anderson against the Flyers, 4-0. A shutout for the Tampa Bay Lightning against Anaheim, 5-0. Ben Bishop. A shutout for Antti Niemi against the Buffalo Sabres, 3-0. And a shutout for the Minnesota Wild against the Nashville Predators, 4-0. Now, hold on here.
We also had
a 6-3 game between the Canucks and the Blackhawks. We also had a 7-3 game between Washington and Colorado. We also had a 5-4 overtime game between the Rangers and the Florida Panthers. So
yeah, I know.
We come back to the simple fact that maybe when we talk about how there is no scoring in this league, you're just not watching the right games.
Or maybe you just need to see what happens over the course of an entire season and then sort of make up your mind on where we're at in scoring. Like, I think I've said on this podcast before, I'm fine with the 3-2 game. If that's going to be the average, I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. I think if it gets down to, like, the average is a 2-1 game, then there's problems. I know a lot of people like the 4-3 game. I get that. But the 3-2 game to me is fine. It's just fine. And you're right. I mean, you can look at all those shutouts and I think a sane person says, well, that's a freak. That's not the smoking gun for, look, we need bigger nets because look at all these shutouts on Saturday night. It's the first time it's ever happened in the history of the NHL. League record. Never happened like that before. But I think the smart person looks at it and says, well, let's also see what's happening around. Oh, look at that. Oh, 9 pucks here. Oh, that's 8 there. Oh, wow. Okay.
And even in some of those shutout games, it was 5 goals, it was 4 goals. Yeah.
Yeah. Freak night. Fun night.
Kind of a freaky night.
I'm fine. I'm actually.
Couple of things from the NHL. Couple things from the NHL Newswire. I give mucho credit to Devin Dubnyk He has called for the National Hockey League to take over the goalie interference coaches challenge. Take it out of the ref's hands.
Yeah.
And do it in the war room.
But, I've said before, if you want consistency, it has to be the same person. Because your definition of goalie interference is different from my definition of goalie interference, which is different from Mike Murphy's definition of goalie interference, which is different from Ken King's, or Chris King, rather. Sorry, Calgary. Chris King's definition of goalie interference. Everyone's definition of goalie interference is different. If you want consistency, yeah. I think it has to be one player. I don't think it can be democratic. Honestly, I think this needs to be North Korea. I am ruling on goalie interference. That's what you do. Get the leader of North Korea to do goalie interference calls. That's what we need. That's the solution.
No, I think they have the right guy. They have the right guy for the job, and that's a gentleman by the name of Christopher Pronger. Who better to tell us what a defenseman does on a play, and who better to dole out with fairness and consistency whether or not a goal is scored than a former defenseman?
You know what? If the NHL just wanted to start trolling, they would hire Dino Cicerelli to handle goaltender interference calls. Just get Dino to take care of all of it.
Oh, no, that's perfect, actually, dude.
What's Thomas Holmstrom doing in retirement? We can bring him along for the fun,
There you go. So you give you it's a two-man unit, and they have to agree, okay? They have to come to some conclusion. Cannot be stalemated. Yeah. Dino Cicerelli and Chris Osgood. Hire those two guys and put them in a room, and then have them suss out whether or not there was goalie interference on a play. It'd be perfect.
Hang on. You want to, like, you know, have, like, some type of flow in a game, right? You don't need, like, a half-an-hour break while these two scrap over what a goalie interference call is, do you?
Would it be any shorter than the delays we already have as two referees look at a Nintendo DS and try to glean whether or not there was interference on a play while everybody is just sitting on their thumbs and asses waiting for this to get sussed out? Probably not.
I don't think it should happen. But hang on a second here. But I see. I was the guy banging the drum all along. Enough of the video review. Enough going to get the call right. What about the flow of the game? Because I'm with you. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. It just stunts the game when you go to the review. And I would like to think that it would be different when you go to the war room in Toronto, but I don't know if that's true. Is it going to be any quicker? Yeah. I don't know. Just because you have more TVs and they're higher quality
and
than
bigger.
The iPad they're using at rink level, I don't know that it's still going to mean that the video review is going to be shorter. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What would you trade?
I've always had a hard time with this idea of this game that I love essentially being a game of stops and starts, and whenever there's a whistle, we all stop, someone reviews what happened on the shift, and then tells us what actually happened. And then we base the next play on that. You know what I mean? Just play.
Yeah, I mean, but you've always been also a fan of the human error aspect of officiating and things like that.
Yes,
I agree with you.
I don't want this. Yes, I have.
Yeah, I don't want this game to be over officiated or over reviewed. The only thing that I would add into the current video review system, and one that I'm kind of surprised didn't make it in the first batch of these types of reviews, is the high sticking call. You know, whether or not there was an errant stick, a teammate-on-teammate situation. Because much like pass interference in the NFL, a high-sticking call in the NHL can be a game-changer based on the power play time you get for it.
Yep. But wasn't that discussed, though? Wasn't that one of the things that was on the table?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was. Like, yeah,
it was, but it didn't make it.
I seem to remember being outraged about it.
So we're here on the Sunday show, of course, and Patrick Marleau just scored. We don't usually get to watch. This is the only show that we do where we have games that are on while we're doing the show.
I'm behind on my game center. Hang on, the puck's just getting dumped in now. Hang on, there's Joel Ward. Down low, Patrick Marleau just got hit from behind by Matt Calvert. We're fishing it out of the corner. Three sharks on it. Now two. Joel Ward peels off.
How far back are
Hang
you?
On. I haven't had the goal yet. Hang on. He play in front. Oh, sneaks in. Joel Ward poking at it. Oh, there you go. Big Sally. Right now. Patrick Marleau just scored.
Marleau scored on my TV, and your TV was basically still on the opening draw. I don't know what the hell happened there. What sort of time warp?
Right beside
me. What sort of time flux is happening in Stouffville where you don't get the game like the rest of us do?
If you'll notice, I don't tweet a lot during games, and it's because I watch on my iPad, and I'm usually about 45 seconds behind everybody. So whenever I tweet about hockey games, I always get the, oh, way to be 2 minutes behind on it, guy.
Merrick's like, I'm going to fire up and watch some NHL hockey. I'm going to watch some NHL hockey tonight. Pew, pew.
That was a nice little tucker, Marlo. That was nice. Whatever happened to... We've all suddenly shifted our attention to Travis Hamonic. What about the Marlo situation?
The Marlo situation,
We really turned our back on that one fast, eh? Man, our attention.
Oh, by the way, if you can find it last night, when Brent Burns scored last night for the Sharks... He let out, I mean, we already know the guy's a Sasquatch, right? But listen, if you can find the goal, listen to the bellow that he gives off when he scores that goal last night. It's really beautiful. It's like,
yeah, his interview afterwards as well was fantastic. And his interplay with Jamie Baker is always great. I get the impression that those two guys are sort of fun on the road together.
I retweeted
the interview. Brent Burns may be my favorite guy in the league.
Is it possible the Sharks are having fun this season? Is that possible?
Are they allowed? I don't know. Every time they do the camera shot up to the GM's box, I think to myself, oh, but no one smile. No one smile. It'll piss Doug off.
Ugh. How does he survive all of this, by the way?
Owner loves him.
I still haven't figured that out.
You know what happens sometimes, and I'm not.
What?
This isn't to cast aspersions on Doug Wilson, but what happens sometimes is when an owner comes in to buy a hockey team, one of two things happens. One, owner thinks he's a know-it-all and messes it up, or owner admits that he really doesn't know it all and relies on one person on the team to provide him all of his information and act as his confidant. That's the impression that I get with the relationship between the owner and the general manager here.
And that's how you get George McPhee in Washington for more than a decade, right?
Was that it? I don't know that dynamic. Was that it?
Yeah.
Was it?
Oh,
was,
God, yeah.
That was it? Okay, I didn't know that.
Leontsis put all of the hockey ops in that man's hands and then was always, I mean, think about how many coaches they went through during the Ovechkin years. When at some point you have to say that about the, but I think that George also bought himself time because they got close. The farm system looked pretty good. I mean, you know, there's reasons why he stayed, but yeah, essentially, it was an owner putting all of his faith in the GM.
You know what I always thought? I always thought that George McPhee had bonuses tied to how underfunded his coaching staff was.
Oh yeah,
because he would always get the most inexperienced, cheap coach around. Like, oh, no, we're not spending money on a coach. Oh, no. We're not going to do that.
Ken Daniels coming up soon to talk about the Detroit Red Wings, by the way. When is it due up? 45 or 50? What is he doing?
50, I think.
50?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, in that case, Sam, if you have the wherewithal, maybe we should kick this thing into high gear, as high a gear as I can get when I got... Flemmies in my throat and in my tummy.
What you gonna do?
Let's start
do?
The show proper,
Flemmies
shall we?
In my throat. What you gonna do?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
It's Oscar the Grouch.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Ah, there's all these empties of Molson in my garbage can, right?
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Well, that's a fun one. Wow. That's a really good one.
That was really sharp. Who did that one? Is that a Mark Cole special? Do we know?
That sounds like a Mark Cole special. Travis Hamonic is on the trade block. As you know, he wants out of Long Island because of family things. And now we're starting to get a sense of the type of defenseman from the type of teams he'd want to play for that could come back the other way to the Islanders. And you're starting to realize there's absolutely no trade that would make sense with the Islanders here. Because...
There's one.
What? Truba?
Chris Tanev? Right-hand shot, 25 years old. Dmitry Filipovich has a really interesting article on the Canucks defense that's up there right now. Well, actually went up November 21st on CanucksArmy.com. Have a look at Tanev, boy. He's 25 years old. That's the one I would come back to. Chris Tanev.
I'll come back to one if they wanted to do it, but I don't think they will. Because I know Truba's the guy that always gets mentioned as the possibility from Winnipeg, and I'm not in love with that. I'll tell you who isn't playing well right now that could get you Hamonic, and it's Jonas Brodin.
It's funny because when I think of Minnesota, and I think that this entire story has kind of been miscast as Travis Hamonic wants to go west to Canada. I think it's just Travis Hamonic wants to go west, and I don't think he's necessarily
right.
just married to going to – like, I think Minnesota is an option for Travis
right.
Hamonic.
He doesn't want to go too far west because he doesn't want to go to California. Right.
But I keep – I mean, if it's Minnesota, wouldn't Matt Dumba be the ask back?
More than Brodin?
Yeah.
Well, Brodin could be the ask. It could be at the end of the day that Brodin's the ask, and it gets the same reaction as the Flames gave you when you asked for Brody.
TJ Brody.
As the guy.
I heard about that.
Which you're not getting, right?
Nope. Oh, no. No, sir.
I think Tanev's interesting. You're going to get a Tanev, or you're going to get like a Nurse or a Klefbom. You know,
You're not getting Nurse. You might get Klefbom, but you're not getting Nurse. They're not letting go of Nurse. No way, no how.
They shouldn't.
Nope. Here's the thing, like, and did I mention this in the podcast? Did we talk about Hamonic last time on the podcast? The thing about a Klefbom situation is here's what you have to measure out. There's more offensive upside with Oscar Klefbom, but Travis Hamonic is a better defensive player. And in Edmonton, you kind of do need both.
Right.
But that comes to a situation where it's not just going to be Oscar Klefbom. It'll be Oscar Klefbom plus in order to get Travis Hamonic, I would assume.
Damian and Elliot talked about the possibility of a Justin Schultz Jordan Eberle duo, which seems like a lot for Hamonic, to be honest with you. Like, if you had a chance to get Jordan Eberle in that deal and a defenseman, wouldn't you do it? Like before Chiarelli gets those words out of his mouth, you've already pressed the trade button.
Or would it be, oh man, I'm such a jerk. Or would it be, yeah, we'd like Eberle. No, we'll only give you Eberle if you take Schultz as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what it would be. I know they want to get defense for defense, but God, like if someone offered you Eberle and you, I mean, not knowing what your deal is with Okposo after the season, now you got Eberle up on the top line.
That's why I can kind of see this thing getting bigger. Like, I can see, considering the trade request goes back to the summer, can't you see this turning into something much bigger considering, listen, folks, Cal Okposo is not coming back? That this may start off as, you know, like the Matt Sundin trade just started off as a trade for Sylvain Lefebvre and, you know, ballooned into this multiplayer deal that's Wendell Clark and Matt Sundin involved. Can't you see this, you know, the beginning of a trade starting with Travis Hamonic and then turning into Travis Hamonic and Kyle Okposo both go somewhere?
Wow.
And the thing,
see,
the thing I, and I keep coming back to Tanev because, I mean, the Islanders don't need prospects, right? The Islanders are a playoff team, period. They need players. That's why Chris Tanev makes sense to me.
I was intrigued. As much as the Okposo thing is interesting, I was really intrigued by Elliot floating the idea that we might see what has basically become the Halley's Comet of National Hockey League transactions here.
The three-way
deal. Oh, give me one of those.
Paging Steve Yzerman.
How do you figure?
I don't know. The last three-way deal, wasn't it Yzerman with the Sam Gagne situation, Teddy Purple?
That's right, yeah. But that wasn't even a proper three-way deal, was it? That was like, the triangle was not complete.
That's right. Didn't we? In the biggest smart-ass question I think we've ever asked here on this podcast, after the trade was done, we had Sam Gagne on, and I can't remember whether it was you or me. It might have been me because I'm a jerk, who asked him, how come things didn't work out in Tampa?
Yes, yeah, that was you.
What went wrong in Tampa, Sam?
My favorite three-way deal was the Claude Lemieux trade. Remember when he decided that he wanted $70 billion from the Devils for winning the Conn Smythe?
Yep.
And they were like, hey, no, we're not going to give you that. You're just a normal everyday guy. And then he's like, I want it. And they're like, okay, then bye. And so it became, it was Claude to the island. No. So he ends up in Colorado. So it's Claude to Colorado, Wendell to the Islanders, Steve Thomas to the Devils. I think that's how it went, if memory serves.
Hang on. I'll find it right now for you because I don't know. So I'm going to go to the computer. Here we go. October 3rd. Traded from the Jersey Islanders for Steve Thomas. Traded from the Islanders to the Avalanche for Wendell Clark. Yeah, you got the primaries right. You got them all right.
Yeah. I can't believe there's no NHL three-way trade wiki.
Hard to believe. Well, it's so rare. Yeah. I guess the Martin Jones situation wasn't a pure three-way deal either, was it?
Here's one. This is from a blog post on a Canucks forum. Justin Williams to L.A., Eric Cole to Carolina, Patrick O'Sullivan to Edmonton.
That was the don't take Dean Lombardi to arbitration trade.
Sam says that our guest is here, by the way. I didn't hear Sam say anything. I guess we didn't, hear him.
I didn't hear. Let's get him.
Joining us online, one of the great voices in this game, covering the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Daniels. Ken, are you there, sir?
I'm here, guys. How you doing?
Sorry to make you
doing
wait
well.
There, man.
That's okay.
Doing well. Hey, Ken, first and foremost, can you quantify the amount of love for Dylan Larkin? Is it gallons? Is it a vat? Is it a tub? Because there's a lot of love for this kid right now.
Well, there's a tub, but I want to hop into your three-way tub for a moment.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
You forgot one. Let's see how good, and Merrick, you don't look this up, okay?
All right, what do you got?
Colorado, Tampa, Detroit, Kyle Quincy, Steve Downey, and the Red Wings gave a first-round pick to Tampa.
First-round pick.
Whom did they pick?
That's right.
Whom did they pick?
Who did they
pick? Yep.
Ooh.
Hang on. Who would they have? Was it Anthony Mantha?
No. Who did Tampa take with the Red Wings pick?
Oh,
Red Wings
who did
gave
Tampa
up a first in the Quincy Downey deal through Colorado.
Oh, and who did Tampa take? Was it the goaltender?
It was.
All right.
Vasilevsky,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
turned out
that
kind of nice for them.
Yeah.
Kind of nice for them.
That's who they took. Not to say, you know, at that point the Red Wings would have done that or needed a goalie at that particular juncture, but, yeah.
Well, hang on. Didn't you guys get Jason Williams in a three-way deal as well?
Yeah,
wasn't
probably.
That like a Kyle Calder? My mind is Lassi Kukkonen, I want to say.
Could have been.
And you guys ended up with Jason Williams.
Yeah, it could have been.
Sometimes,
Jeff, it's tough to remember three ways from all the way back, you know?
Oh, you know, Kenny, we're all young ones. We're all young ones, Kenny. Yeah, I know.
Hey, Kenny, let's pause on this for a second, though. Are you someone who thinks that they've got to figure out a way to loosen up the ability for teams to make trades? Because we're hearing a lot about that right now in the sense that every GM is anonymously telling reporters, we can't do a damn thing right now with the way this cap situation is and no one's trying to make any deals. Do you think the NHL needs to step in and try to open up the trade market more?
100%. And you know, dollars, why, sure, that would help. But they love the parity. They love the way it all is at the moment, and everybody's so close. And I was thinking the Hamonic, there has to be a three-way in there somewhere. There's got to be some type of third team in there to do that deal. And then I think it's conceivable for parts that someone needs. I don't see why not, but boy, it takes with the agents involved and everything else and the creativity, it's especially for a player of his stature, it's probably not an easy one to pull off. But I think there are three teams' needs that could probably be met.
I've always looked at trades. I mean, just as, you know, hockey deals to help improve a team. But I've also, from the NHL point of view, Ken, looked at them as a key piece of marketing and a key piece of advertising because it gets more ink, it gets more lips flapping. about your product. And, you know, by way of the salary cap, and we all know that salary caps act as magnets, and everyone goes to them, and then no one can budge. Mm-hmm. You're removing one bullet from the marketing chamber of the NHL.
You are, and look at even the attention, although it may have been, as, you know, I heard Elliot Friedman say that, you know, just maybe trying to light a fire under Duchesne, but look at all the talk. You know, okay, you don't hear it necessarily here in Detroit, the hockey talk that way, where at this time of year the Lions, for as bad as they are, although one again, dominate the news. But in Canada, that's just everybody's talking. You're talking hockey. It's just throwing a name out there and who can go. And I think the NHL dearly misses that.
Well, you guys need to visit Hockey Buzz more. That's where I get most of my hot rumors in life. All right, listen, we've talked about trades enough. We need to talk about Dylan Larkin because this kid is amazing and everybody loves him. Yeah. What's impressed you the most about Larkin this season?
You know, it was a comment that I hadn't heard before, and it would leave one to Ken Hitchcock to say it, and we had him in our open because Red Wings were in St. Louis last night. And he said the thing that impresses him most about Dylan Larkin is that he can sniff out danger. And he said he does that way beyond what a 19-year-old should be able to do. He can sense the landmines, when he's going to get hit, where he's going. And when I look at it, that is Dylan Larkin. With his speed and as fast as he goes, and we've seen Taylor Hall, who can go 1,000 miles an hour sometimes and doesn't know where he's going. And it was Darren Helm in a different way when he was so fast and the tools and not necessarily the toolbox and finally put it together and knew when to slow down. Larkin's already got that at 19. He's that fast. His skating stride, the lower body strength, and as Ken Hitchcock said, the ability to sense out danger. All of it impresses me. I've had the luxury through now 19 years in Detroit of, you know, able to of 16 call Nick Lidstrom's games, and then to get Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and forget the 0-2 team with Holland, Robitaille, and everybody else. However, to see Larkin coming up now as the first since I've been here, because I was here long after Steve Yzerman, although his last few years, but not when he was young, to watch Dylan Larkin at 19, I mean, sure, Hudler came in at 19, okay, and Yuri Fisher, but it wasn't the same. So this is in a long time because Zetterberg and Datsyuk were older. So in a long time for fans in Detroit and me first in my mind to be able to see him over the boards every night and waiting for something to happen that I almost felt with the Magic when Pavel Datsyuk hops over the boards, that's almost the way I'm feeling about Dylan Larkin now, and that says something.
Wow.
Who
that's
wins the race right now? If they had a race tonight or tomorrow morning or Tuesday or whenever, right now, who wins the race, Dylan Larkin or Darren Helm?
I'd almost put my money on Larkin.
Yeah, me too.
And you know what? And I only because Darren's getting a little older, although he's still young enough. Andreas Athanasiou could probably win that race too. And that's how fast the Red Wings can be. Now, Helm's an unrestricted free agent end of the year, so no telling even if he'll be back. And boy, you know, without a goal yet, he's probably feeling some pressure on himself just to get going after the year he had last year and a year, which is a contract year. But he's still pretty quick, and he's, you know, he missed all the camps, so he's been slow coming. And that's reasonable after the shoulder and concussion issues and the big hit he took 10 minutes into training camp. So he's just now getting probably where he should be. So he's coming. He'll start to score. But in terms of a race, I go with maybe Larkin.
You know what would have been fat? One more thing about Dylan Larkin. I swear, we'll stop gushing about him, Kenny. He's a great player.
I was on the road, and one of the other play-by-play guys said, you know, how good is this kid going to be? And I said, he's going to be a star. And he goes, whoa, wait a minute. And I said, you just watch him for a little bit.
Yeah, and, but in fairness, like, the Red Wings fans are like the Colorado fans, where they all think that we hate them for some reason. So this is our
really
chance to go all in, squat down, do the lap dance, get it all out of our system. I think part of it is because I didn't pay up on Helena's bet with the champagne. I've tried, but she won't let me. So I think they also think that's another reason why I don't like Red Wings.
Here's a scary thing. You've probably talked about this before, Ken. Dylan Larkin, had he not gone to the University of Michigan, all right, and he was going. We all know he was going. But, you know, you play the game of ifs and buts. You know who held his draft rights in the OHL, right?
No, who did?
The Erie Otters. He could have
really
played on a line with Connor McDavid and Erie. Had he chose not to go to Michigan for the 1 year and instead played in the OHL, could you imagine the speed on the line of Dylan Larkin and Connor McDavid?
Now, DeBrincat wasn't there at the time, right?
No, he was, Alex DeBrincat, this would have been, No, because last year was Alex DeBrincat. It's rookie year. Yeah, he would. Yeah. Well, no, hang on a second. No, 14-15. No, yeah, he would have. DeBrincat would have been there because, yeah, the 13-14, he was at prep school, and then he would have gone over. Yeah, so DeBrincat would have been there as well.
Hmm. Yeah. That was, you know, I saw Dylan play with at the under 18 because we did some games before he got to the University of Michigan, and I think Sonny Milano and Alex Tuck were teammates, yeah. And they went just before I think Dylan was taken in that 2014 draft. And when I spoke to Red Berenson at the start of his freshman year there at Michigan, you know, and he did so well with Zach Hyman, and I said, "How long are you gonna have Dylan for?" And Red said, "At least 1 year." So yeah. He even knew at the time, you know, and to watch him, and I think yeah. In the minutes in the U.S. under 18, he was playing behind Jack Eichel. So good on the Red Wing scouts, and I think when they looked at it to take Dylan in the first round of that draft, I believe it would have been David Pastrnak would have been the one who maybe they would have leaned toward had they not gone toward Dylan Larkin, but they just, and as you know, it's not after the fact, they talked privately about him at the time. They just loved him. So I think it would have been one of those two who would have gone to Detroit.
As we've seen this team for we're almost at the quarter pole, I guess it is. Discernible differences in coaching style between a Jeff Blashill Red Wings team and a Mike Babcock Red Wings team?
Well, where do we begin? One's a real hard nut, as you know, and the other isn't, so take a guess which one that is. So, and believe me, the one, if you guessed correctly, who is the hard nut, and I mean that in a good way, but after 10 years, that can wear, but there's no doubt he's a terrific coach. He really is. And in the same way, Jeff Blashill, I believe, is as organized and attention to detail. I just think they go about it in two different ways. And I think after 10 years, Mike's way, and he'd probably admit it too, it was time for a change. But the players who were driven by Mike Babcock, probably scared to make a mistake, now have to find that little extra give a what meter and just dial it up under a guy whom they all wanted to play for. And, you can play for good guys, good coaches, players, coaches, as they say. Heck, Nashville played a lot of great years for Barry Trotz, and he seems to be doing okay in Washington. Mm-hmm. And anyone will tell you who's played for Barry, they just absolutely love him. I've spoken to a lot of players, and I haven't heard many who don't. And they say the same thing about Jeff. And it doesn't mean you can't be a good guy in this day and age, read the players, and that's what Jeff does, and still have success. And I think in time, he will. The guys are just finding their way and have to drive it up a little bit. It's a different voice, albeit the same tone. They just have to find it within themselves, and they're getting there.
You know, it really is remarkable the way that, maybe it should be remarkable because it's kind of predictable now that we know how the player's about, but Pavel Datsyuk comes back and almost everybody's possession numbers go up. It becomes almost a different team because I'll tell you, Ken, and I've said this on the podcast a couple of different times, that I was not in love with the Red Wings to start the season. I thought they were a team that was bailed out countless times by their netminders, and they were fantastic. Is that an accurate assessment?
Bailed out last year, you're saying, by netminders, or early this
year? No, beginning of the season.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Oh, they're most valuable players, I guess, besides Larkin. And there was a while there where Zetterberg carried them in the absence of Datsyuk was the goaltending. Peter Mrazek, I know Jonathan Bernier has the lowest goal support in the National Hockey League, and Anderson and Anaheim is up there. And I think in fourth, at least heading into the weekend, was Peter Mrazek. He got no goal support. So as great as the .935 save percentage is, his win-loss record is just above 500. Should be a heck of a lot better, but got nothing to show for it from his team who couldn't score. And Jimmy Howard, when he's been called upon, and now that the back-to-backs are over through October and November, the Red Wings, I think it's seven of them, or six or seven of them, now one's going to start to take the reins, but it's been a toss-up. Right now, maybe I'd lean toward Peter, but boy, both have been really good. And yep, early on, while they found the new system under Jeff, yeah, and getting some injured guys back, and Datsyuk now, and Richard's healthy, you can see the difference the way other teams have to back off and try to match with Pavel. So goaltending held them, and now the Red Wings are in a better position to match with veteran guys.
Yeah, we've talked about that with you before, the goaltending battle there. I find it endlessly fascinating because it's such a contrast in styles. Mrazek is a real swing for the fences guy. He's the guy who can win you a game on your own. Howard is much more the known quantity, the steady hand, if you will. I have always felt that Mrazek was going to end up winning this thing, and then If he ever did, I wondered what the market would be for a Jimmy Howard, because you have to figure there has to be a market for a guy like that if they decided to move off him, right?
I'm with you, 100%. At some point, they may have to move off him. But I know that even if the Red Wings, after the playoff last year, and there's no reason to think Mrazek couldn't do it, but there is a reason to think Mrazek couldn't do it if your backup was Thomas McCullum or Jared Coral, in all fairness. So if you were going to deal Jimmy Howard, you'd have to, A, sign a free agent goaltender, a veteran guy, or when you're moving Jimmy Howard, even if it, I can't see it happening this year, but next year in the offseason at what, 5.4, 3 years left on the deal, I think he'd be a number one with a young team that could steady a group under a decent contract. Nobody could go wrong with Jimmy Howard. It's just I think the Red Wings would need a very good, solid backup behind Peter Mrazek just in case. But I think Mrazek's potential is endless. Just the way he plays, the calmness, when you watch him move side to side, the handling the puck, rebound control, which, by the way, Jimmy Howard has got better at both of those this year. Handling the puck and rebound control, way better for Jimmy Howard, and that's why his game's improved.
Who's Riley Sheehan going to end up being when his career is all said and done? We're going to look back at him and say he was what type of hockey player? Because for so many years it was, well, you know what? He's going to be a shadow. He's going to be a defensive center. He can move his feet, but there's not much offensive upside there. What do you think Riley Sheehan's going to be?
That's a good question. I don't really like comparing guys to who they're going to be. But Sheehan is
what type of player, maybe? Like, what type of player is Riley Sheehan going to be?
A solid. He showed last season he's got good hands. He hasn't scored this year, but neither have even Helm and Glendening, who had 27 goals between them last season. The Glendening scored the first between them this year. So Sheehan's not, you know, he had 13 goals last year, so he hasn't found that yet. But I think Riley Sheehan, he's got three this year. He's going to be a consistent 10 to 15 goal scorer, I think, in the league. And it's not easy to score 15 goals in the league, as you know, anymore. Yeah. But can he score between 10 and 15 every year? Yeah, 15 may be a high mark. Could he ever score 20? Maybe pushing it. But he's going to be a solid, reliable penalty killer, good mover of the puck. He's got to get better in the faceoff dot. Some nights he had a rough night, like a couple of nights ago. He was 2 and 10. So he's got to get better. But I think when you look at Sheehan, Nyquist, Tatar, when, as Datsyuk has 1 year left on his deal next year, if he remains in North America, so he's got one more year in his deal, then Zetterberg's getting a little older. You got to look for Sheehan as Larkin becomes probably your first line center down the road. Sheehan can be a solid second line center, I guess, is the long answer. And I think they're looking for Sheehan, Nyquist, and Tatar to be the next leaders of this team.
And last one for me. So we got Detroit currently third in the Atlantic. They're behind Montreal. They're behind Ottawa. Boston's been maybe a little bit better than we thought they'd be, although they are certainly giving up more goals than they have in the past. Florida's hanging around, Buffalo, whatever. I mean, is it pretty well established in your mind that this is going to end up being a playoff team this year, given the rest of the division?
Yeah, not well established, but I think the streak can continue, yeah. And I think the leadership in that room and how much everyone on this team has played for Jeff, and if nothing else, hey, the other guy's gone, we're sure as heck not missing the playoffs. I would think that, you know, after the departure of Mike Babcock, that these guys, in the end, with the leadership in there, can even will this team in to get in if they're on the bubble. But that's how you mentioned, you know, if you look at Montreal, the Rangers, and Washington, I'm not sold on Pittsburgh. Everybody else is the same, pretty much, except for the bottom couple. Even Columbus is coming on lately. Everybody else is pretty much the same. So can the Red Wings be third? I think they'd like to be. But third or, you know, wild card, I don't see why they can't be. And Datsyuk and Richards being healthy, Quincy will be back in another couple of months. That's going to help the back end as these guys, the kids, gain more experience. So I think they got the potential. They just have to score. And I want to see this team in about 5 to 10 games with Pavel Datsyuk healthy and Mike Green settling in. And Bradley.
Kenny, last one here for you. Let's rewind to the day the Toronto Maple Leafs visited the Joe Louis Arena with Mike Babcock behind the bench. Do you know how much exactly was on the board? Because I heard the number three. I heard the number three was in front of it, and my jaw dropped.
Whoa.
And it wasn't just 3,000.
That's right. That's what I'm saying, Ken.
Yeah. Truthfully, I don't. I did hear a lot. But even when I did ask, just to, you know, after games, you're on the elevator, you're going to the hotels, you're on the road, the guys would just laugh and they'd say a lot. So I never actually did hear a number. but it won't be the first first room in the league to do it. I just know it's not Toronto, yep. San Jose, and handing Ron Wilson cash. I know that wasn't.
That was one of the greatest candid great. Moments of all time.
Yes,
without
it was.
Question. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, the great Ken Daniels. Hey, Kenny, thanks for making time for us on a Sunday, and we will talk to you down the line.
Thanks, guys. My
thanks,
pleasure.
Ken. Yeah, I heard it was a record breaker.
When so what, like 30?
Returned. That's what I heard.
300? 30?
Mm-hmm. It's not 300, not 3,000.
But the one in the middle.
Again. I heard it was a staggering amount.
That's awesome. Couple of reader questions now. Alex would like to know, who is the current front runner for the Norris? Well, I think we could say with some confidence that if John Klingberg continues to be better than a point per game, that his name will be in the mix, I would say.
Yeah.
Erik Karlsson, also better than point per game. Ryan Suter is a point per game player and plays 27 minutes. I'm sure he'll get some love, too. And PK Subban is right around there, too. But as far as, like, actual defensive defensemen, it gets a little tougher. Because there are guys right now that
you want a hipster pick?
I want a hipster pick. Go ahead.
Roman Josi.
I like that pick.
I like that pick a lot, too.
You want another hipster pick?
Go for it.
Guy who is right now, for all defensemen, 5-on-5, at least 200 minutes played. A guy who right now is fifth in Corsi. Aaron Ekblad.
Really, eh?
Yeah. He's having a good year. Won't have the points, though, but having a good year.
Klingberg will have the points. With that Ekblad's team, John Klingberg will
nine
have points. The points.
Actually, you know what's funny about Ekblad, too? I didn't realize to look at his numbers. He's only playing 20 minutes a night. That's low compared to what I thought he was playing for him.
That's kind of right for him at this point of his career, don't you think?
I mean, but you think about Florida.
Rock Brian Campbell minutes.
Suter 27-39, Pietrangelo, Pietrangelo 27-20, and then they're the only two above 27 at this point. Carlson's at 26-59, Dowdy 26-45, Brent Burns 26-23.
Holy crap! Ekblad's Corsi is 57. Holy jeez!
It's pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. But yeah, I would say Klingberg is going to be up there. A lot of his points on the power play, no doubt, and not the same amount of ice time as Suter and Karlsson, for example. But, you know, if this kid ends up leading the league and scoring amongst defensemen, I mean, I can't see how he's not going to be in a Norris top three. Do you?
Nope. Although I don't get a vote, so, you know. Throw it out the window.
Well, you will soon. I mean, now that you're writing, right? So
you can accept me into the Professional Hockey Writers Association, but then I'll have to know what position everybody is.
I would stand by you, sir. I would be your tribute. I would.
So because I write a weekly column about the Canadian Hockey League, get you on the Professional Hockey Writers Association. You'd
Jackie
stand up
Klink,
the next meeting.
Jackie Klink wants writes in curious what happened to the question of the day. Well. I don't know.
I was thinking about that a while ago. Oh man, you and I would sweat and pour over that every day. Oh, what's the question?
We would, but I think it came. It was a factor of like when we were doing the show a little bit less consistently last year. It was a thing where we were just really happy that people still had questions of any kind. So it wasn't like a question of the day type deal. It was more like, you want to talk to us still? That's lovely. Let's talk to you.
Really?
You're
I thought
there?
I was talking to my dog here on the floor. Really? Okay.
It may also be a as you said, a casualty of laziness, in the sense that, you know, not only would we have to come up with a question of the day, but we'd also have to come up with a question of the day that we hadn't done before or hadn't done in the last month, and that was always tough. A little bit.
Who's your favorite right winger? Who's your favorite right?
Jason Lee Foster has a technical question for you. What are the notes the penalty box keeper is making when the penalty box keeper is writing stuff down?
The penalty box keeper?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would imagine name, number, time of infraction, what the infraction was.
I think he's probably writing down all the nasty things they say and narking on them. He's a little checkbox.
I will tell you what. I've always felt that there is a great book to be written by a penalty box timekeeper, by someone in the penalty box. Don't you think? The things that you've heard and seen.
Anonymously or on the record?
Nah, you can do it on your way out, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. My career is done. Here's my book. Bam. Here's all the stuff I heard.
I would love that. I would also love if I want, actually what I really want is a leaked recording. I want someone to during a real rivalry game, just keep a recorder going between the penalty boxes and then just release it. What do you think about that?
I'm surprised. Would the technology even exist to be able to record something? Like, you'd have to, you know, this is a good question for Patrick, our buddy, out west, who knows all these types of audiophile things. How close would you have to be to actually record a bench conversation?
This is a really interesting question because I have thought about the legalities of if I was at like a
It's considered public space. Hockey game.
If I was at a Board of Governors meeting and I saw two guys off in the distance talking, could I use one of those microphones with a satellite dish behind it that you use for spying?
Oh, my God.
And just listen in.
That's what you need to do. At the next BOG, just get the white van. Oh, nice goal by CBJ. Oh, that was a pretty goal.
I don't think you'd be allowed to, and I think that in general the NHL may frown upon that type of journalism.
But, oh, you think?
The thought crossed my mind listen, it's not bugging the room, which is probably what Bill Wirtz used to do. I don't know that for sure. But it's definitely,
He didn't need to. He had the head of the Players Association in his pocket anyhow. Hi, Eagle.
Oh, are you telling me when he used to have meetings on his boat, he wouldn't bug the boat? Of course he would. That guy seemed downright Nixonian.
You mean like the other owners?
Yes.
He didn't need it. He had Ziegler in one pocket, and he had Eagle in the other.
Right. There you go. Grant Becker wants to know, can the Central Division get a bonus playoff team this year, asking for a friend?
No kidding, eh? One really good team for sure is not going to make the playoffs, and it's going to be the Central.
Group of death.
Oh, it's so bad. And if you're the Winnipeg Jets, like, oh, man. Oh, I know we wanted to go west, but jeez. Did we want this?
I talked to Poyle about that last week. I talked to Poyle about the Central and how tough it is. Nashville right now, Dallas, St. Louis, Minnesota are your top three in the Central with Nashville and Chicago as your wild cards, and Winnipeg is 2 points out of the last wild card. So pretty much what I'm trying to tell you guys is the outside of Colorado with 15 points this year, the top three teams in the Central – And Nashville all have, I'm sorry, the top three teams in the Central and Nashville and Chicago all have more points than the current first place teams in the Pacific, although that can change today if San Jose wins.
It's pretty good, eh? And that's the thing about Colorado too, like they've been out of it. Normally you say like, oh man, we're out of it at Christmas time. Like Colorado's been out of it for 3 weeks. How depressing is that? And here come the Avalanche. You guys hate Colorado.
Yeah,
but it's true.
They've been out of it for a long time.
They've been out of it for a long time. I think I've told you before on the podcast, I want to like Colorado. I mean, I wanted to like them more when Ryan O'Reilly was there, but I still want to like Colorado.
I don't know. You just
keep giving me reasons not to like them.
You're awfully mean to them all the time.
They need to be the Oakland A's is what they need to be.
The thing I don't get about Avs fans and the Avs fans that say nasty things about us on Twitter.
But what is
the counter argument right now to Patrick Waugh is a terrible coach, the team is poorly structured, and Joe Sakic hasn't done a very good job as general manager. Like what is the counter argument? Is it that anomalous year of their making the playoffs is the norm and that everything that's happened since is anomaly? Like, what is the counter argument? That's the thing I don't get.
You know, it's so funny because normally in a situation like this, you'd say to yourself, well, you know what? They weren't as good as that team that we saw a couple years ago, but they're not as bad as the team we see now. Oh, yes, they are. They are. And unless the goaltender stands on his head, they are.
But again, that's just speaking to the few Colorado fans that listen to this podcast. That's my issue right now. My issue right now is it's fine if you want to say that we pick on your team. It's fine if you want to say that we don't know what we're talking about. And it's fine if you want to say that we're talking out of our asses when we say that Sakic and Wah could leave after this season. That's fine. Whatever. That's cool. Tell me what the counter argument is to Patrick Wah as a terrible NHL coach. Is it because he played the game and we didn't? Is it because he's a good-looking man? Is it because you're beholden to the incredible nostalgia that the Avalanche decided to put into their positions of power because they had nothing else to go with? I mean, what is it about this team? Tell me what the counter argument is that this team isn't terrible, and it isn't terrible because of the coach. Like, what is the counter argument?
You can't be asking me because I don't have a counter argument.
I'm asking rhetorically.
And maybe this is a positional thing as well. But if you tried to make a list of the great coaches in the NHL who are also goaltenders, it won't take you very long. Right? Like if you go down the history of the NHL and make a list of
I don't know
coaches,
if that proves anything, though. I don't know if that proves anything.
How come none of them coach?
They manage.
So they get what's that? I don't know. Who's plenty of other positional players want to. But wouldn't you think though, someone that is in a position to watch a lot of the game and analyze a lot of what's right in front of you would make for a good coach?
Well, let me proffer this. How many pitchers become baseball managers? Not all that
well, let
many.
Let me proffer this. I don't
yes.
know.
Well then, I will add the twist back to hockey and say, is it possible that position players would not be as receptive to a guy who plays the freaky non-scoring position as they would be to say a guy who is a scorer or a guy who is a defenseman?
I don't know.
You know
I don't know
I mean?
The answer, but I've always wondered why more goaltenders don't get into coaching. Every other position is represented, not goaltending.
Like if you're a left,
is it because
you're left wing?
Is it because,
and all of a sudden you have a goalie telling you how you should play your position? Are you going to be sitting there being like, hey, what do you know?
Okay, hey, look, dude, John Cooper's a lawyer. Last time I checked, Tampa went to the freaking Stanley Cup final.
Right.
I don't see Tyler Johnson saying, effing lawyer wants me to come down for the outlet pass.
Do you know how important it is to be able to succinctly and correctly state your case when talking to an official? It's a very important skill in this league.
I get that. Maybe there is something to that, that as a goaltender you don't – because defensemen and forwards – when they coach, they generally stay away from the goaltender. They won't even talk to the goaltender. So maybe that's
it's a very specialized position.
How much do you really know about forwards and defensemen? Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's just that simple. I'm trying to make something more difficult than it is.
Is there a goalie that would have made a great coach? That's the question. I'm trying to think. Marty Biron?
I think he's smart as hell.
Yeah, he's
I really
smart
do think
hell.
Marty Biron is smart as hell.
Steve Valiquette would be a great one too. Yeah,
I could see Steve Valiquette.
So pretty much. I mean, are there any Rangers backups that we can't point to and say would have made a great coach?
That's right. Oh God, they're both Ranger backups.
See, right. Mike Dunham would have been a great coach.
Oh, that's really good. Okay.
Mike Richter. Okay. Mike Richter could have become a great coach, except he wanted to be a politician instead.
Yeah, sorry about your luck. All right, so then Cam Talbot, when it's all said and done, he's your next great coach in the NHL.
might be coaching within like the next 3 years.
Oh, come on now. No one on this podcast predicted that based on his history. Anyway, let's move on.
Con Air McDavid writes in, what's your favorite
great name.
Dish to I know. What's your favorite dish to order at a Chinese place? I'd be curious about yours. Mine is a comfort food from our friends over in Asia. It's called beef chow fun. Beef chow fun, of course, is a peasant food. It's slabs of overcooked and fatty meat, but surrounded by delicious wide noodles that melt in your mouth.
Mine's the same. No, my standby has always been hot and sour soup. That's the one for me. That's how I judge. And I admittedly, I go to so few Chinese restaurants. But when I do, Greg, it's hot and sour soup for me. I need it so like I'm dripping sweat into the soup. I'm that guy. That's how hot I want it. I'll drink my own sweat in a hot and sour soup. I don't care. Oh yeah.
That's so true though. Like really hot food could be like
the best.
With me fighting this like chest cold, all I wanted, I just want to eat the hottest thing imaginable. I just want
it
like
yeah, do it, man.
Suck on a ghost chili for a while and see if it does the trick.
Yeah, ghost pepper really is the. I gave you ghost pepper hot sauce when you were here, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, I
gave me a lot of things. Gave me a lot of things over there.
That's true too.
Stillville's a very natural place. A lot of things grow there.
Yep, that's right. A lot of wonderful things.
The KZA, the Kizza, I imagine that would be. What's your opinion on fans in Australia? Well, we only know a couple fans from Australia. But they're pretty good people. Yeah.
Everyone that I've always ever interacted with from Australia about hockey, I always get the impression they're like berserk about it and will gobble up any tiny little bit of information about the game to take back to their country. Like they just can't wait. Like, I can't tell you. Well, I mean, listen. I mean, Sasky was one, right? Our girl Sask came all the way over here to, you know, to do an internship with the Everett Silvertips of the Western Hockey League. And how old was she? Like 11 when she did it?
Yeah, yeah. I guess my only complaint about Australian fans, and this is mostly based on Sasky, is the idea that they're very obsessed with Nathan Walker, which is a bit like if you think about like the athlete who
but
came from
was
your
drafted.
Hometown,
who made the
ECHL, and yet they still invited him to speak at graduation. You know, it's kind of like that. You know,
get drafted in the National Hockey League, bud. You got drafted in the NHL. An Australian got drafted in the NHL. Have
finally,
a Nathan Walker.
Augustus Eustace writes in. I think one way to increase scoring around the power play, short of the extreme measure that would be the two-minute major, I disagree, that'd be a perfectly reasonable rule, is enforcing penalties after a goal was scored on a delayed call. The NCAA used this rule, and it seemed like a no-brainer to me. So, delayed call, 6-on-5, you score a goal, you still get a power play. Listen, if you want to say that a two-minute major is extreme, which is your want, I will say that this would be a happy medium, is to have the penalty enforced even if you score on a delayed call.
Sure, or just put two pucks on the ice.
Oh, here we go again.
Let's just put two pucks on the ice.
That's your answer for everything.
That's my answer for everything. At this point, that's all I'm going to bobblehead now, but two pucks on the ice. Mm. You want more goals? Hang on. If you have one puck and it's 4-3, if you have two pucks, it'll be 8-6.
Right.
And everyone will be happy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, two pucks then. Two pucks, yep. Please.
Two pucks? Two pucks?
Yeah, two pucks.
Yeah,
two pucks.
And if that ever comes around, I hope that you will all enjoy my follow-up book, Take your Eye Off the Puck. You know, it'd be great if I could actually remember the title of my own book when trying to make a joke about it, right?
I could tell that when you started on that little bit that you'd forgotten the name of your book.
Oh, shut up. It's not that I forgot it.
It's like your brain was spooling for a second waiting for the information
no,
to show
it's
up.
More, yeah, that's the thing. The little wheel was turning in my head and it was not working as it should.
You're getting like the psychedelic pizza going in your head for the information to show up.
Psychedelic pizza.
Yeah, man.
All right. That's the show for tonight day.
and Monday. The Smonday. What are we calling it?
The Smonday show.
Our Smonday. Who coined that? Was it Sarah Pettick, our friend in Pittsburgh?
No, it was us.
Who was it?
I've refused to give credit to anybody for anything. The Smonday podcast. So thanks to Ken Daniels for joining us. Thanks for producer Sam for making this happen. Thanks to everyone currently sitting in my living room for being silent for the last hour.
Who's in your living room right now? Who's in your living room? Come on, round the table.
Ruby and her dad.
All right, hello, Ruby and her dad.
And Sneakers, too. Sneakers was very quiet as well.
Good job, Sneakers. Well done. First star, Premier Etoile. Yeah. Madame and Monsieur, here tonight's Molson Cup, 3-star, as selected by Red Fisher, the Montreal Gazette, the Premier Etoile, the first star, Sneakers. Is that good?
I always like when we have French style. When we have French guests on and you start going into that rigmarole.
Salut mon chum, ça va?
Oh, salut, ça va, chum? Eh, soufflé, Champs-Élysées, mon ami. And then whoever's on the phone is always like, oh, Jeffrey, oh, soufflé, Champs-Élysées. I'm like, I'll just play with my balls for a while or something while you guys get this out of your system, you know?
Ah, rub sack, six pack, ah, c'est bien ça.
Should be a Tuesday show, I think. It's kind of it's American Thanksgiving this week.
As I like to call it,
Thanksgiving. And and so it's kind of a wacky week in that regard, but we'll figure it out.
I'm good for Tuesday if you're good for Tuesday. Are you doing stuff Tuesday? What are you doing Tuesday? Are you have plans on Tuesday?
We can make it work. I know how we can make it work.
Okay.
All right.
I eagerly await.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And tomorrow on Puck Daddy, Ryan Lambert breaks down the Columbus Blue Jackets. We'll probably do some trophy watch stuff. And coming up later this week on Puck Daddy, on Thanksgiving, something that everybody always loves every year, in which we have a cast of thousands chime in with what in hockey they're thankful for. Always a very lighthearted and life-reaffirming series of posts that go up on Thanksgiving Day.
When do you need that in by? I got your email. When do you need?
By Wednesday at 5, if you get a chance to.
I can do that. I just need to figure out what I'm thankful for. Not sure what that is.
Yeah, who knows? And that's about it. We will talk to you on Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Thanks, everybody.
We can do this.
Oh, and also the name of my book is Take Your Eye Off the Puck. Just want to mention that. It's on Amazon and wherever books are sold.
Unbelievable.
Number one bestseller on Amazon still in hockey, yeah. There was a brief moment in the last 24 hours when Ty Domi's book was outselling me. And I thought about that elbow that he laid out Scott Niedermeyer with that one time, and I got sad. I'm like, how could anyone support this thug over someone as wonderful as me? But now the universe is back on its axis, and Take Your Eye Off the Puck is number one again.
This is essentially Greg doing yoga.
A specific kind of yoga?
A very specific kind of yoga.
A very specific kind of flexible yoga?
That's right. It's correct.
Yes. Gotcha.
Someone get Greg a mint quick.
Talk to you guys Tuesday. Bye. Thank you.